Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me today on University Matters, Professor Arnold Cassola. Arnold Cassola is Professor of Maltese and Comparative Literature here at the University of Malta. He's also taught at the Universities of Catania in between 1981 and 1983, and Roma, La Sapienza, between 83 and 88. He co-founded the Alternativa Democratica, the Green Party, here in Malta in 1989, and was elected Secretary General of the European Green Party in Brussels, a post he held from 1999 to 2006. And he was member of the Italian Chamber of Deputies between 2006 and 2008. He's the author of many, many academic publications and books, and amongst these one might mention the Biblioteca Valliceliana, the Regole per la Lingua Maltese, which came out in 92, the 1565 Ottoman Malta Campaign Register, and the Literature of Malta, an example of unity and diversity in 2000, and a very interesting book, which I really must go away and read, because I didn't know anything about it, Francesco Vella, 1793 to 1868, an unsung protagonist of Maltese language development, which came out in 2003. Welcome to the programme, Professor Cassola.
Thank you, Trisha.
Today, we're going to talk about your latest publication, which is entitled Lost Maltese Newspapers of the 19th Century. It is a fascinating period of Maltese history, the 19th century. Perhaps, though, before going into the actual world of lost newspapers, which is interesting in its own right, perhaps you could put that early part of the 19th century in an historical context with regard to Malta and its British overlords, if I want to put it like that.
Yes, one must keep in mind that, first of all, with regards to printing, Malta did not have a regular printing press basically until after the second half of the 18th century. So the publishing of books, newspapers, etc. in Malta was something which did not exist, or existed very, very little before that. Politically, Malta passed from the Knights of St. John in 1798 to the French, but they only lasted 2 years. However, they were fundamental in publishing the first newspaper of Maltese, the Knights, which was Le Journal de Malte, what is today La Gazzetta del Governo. The French, during their 2 year stay, started publishing the Journal de Malte, Gazzetta del Governo, in a bilingual format. In French, which they tried to impose, but obviously in 2 years they didn't manage to, but also in Italian, which was the language spoken and understood by the intelligentsia, Maltese intelligentsia, at the turn of the century. The British, of course, took over in 1800, as we all know, this part of history, and immediately, basically, we started having the first Italian exiles coming to live in Malta. Italy was part of the, we were in the Romantic period, which is a literary period, but it's also a strong political period linked to nationalism. And one must keep in mind that a number of modern European countries were born in the 19th century, when, I mean, today, Europe's greatest power, Germany, was not united in the 19th century. It was united during the 19th century. Italy, our neighbour, was not united. Greece got its independence in 1821, with Lord Byron dying in Missolunghi, fighting for the rights of the Greeks, etc. So, limiting ourselves to Italy, remember that Malta was an Italophone culture, was Italophone culturally, so the ruling classes spoke, read, the administration was in Italian. And you had these the beginning of these rumblings, which were to last until 1861. In fact, this year, 2011, is the 150th anniversary of the Italian unification. But, of course, there were a lot of uprisings which failed before, during these 50 years, until 1861. The main ones being in 1821 and in 1848. And when these uprisings failed, the Italians were fighting against the Pope, the Papal States, the French, the Austrians, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Borboni, the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, etc. Obviously, they had to escape. And two of the places where they liked to escape most to, which were quite comfortable, I must say, but were Corsica and Malta, for two reasons. One, that they were islands very close to Italy, so they could keep in touch with the Italian, more or less, of course, at that time, no internet, but they still could keep in touch with what was going on in the peninsula. And two, they were Italophone, so they could continue writing and in Italian and their things. And basically, the first Italian we know of who started the newspaper in 1804 was Lorenzo Borsini. And they started, with having the printing press now, they started publishing these newspapers in Italian, which were also exported to Italy. But remember that there was no freedom of press here in Malta. And the British, in 1839, gave freedom of press. And it was also a political move. The British calculated that these Italian revolutionaries were fighting against their traditional enemies. They were fighting against the Spanish, the Bourbons, they were fighting against the French, they were fighting against the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So they were helping, in a way, anything that could... They helped these four usciti living in Malta to publish their things, to continue with their political activity, because this would weaken their political enemies. At the end, however, this was to backfire internally, because, of course, the Maltese started speaking to these people, sharing ideas with them, contributing to their newspapers. The first big Maltese writers all started writing in Italian in newspapers in Malta with these esiliati. and eventually nationalism crept into Malta, and the Maltese started using the same arguments which the Italians had been using 60, 70 years ago against the French, Austrians, and Pope and so on, against the English. And that's where Maltese nationalism started. And in fact, in the 1880s, we have the Partito Nazionalista being born, no, for the first time. So 1839 is this freedom of press, which therefore saw a flourishing of hundreds of newspapers, including Maltese newspapers.
I was going to say, in the Maltese about language. The Italian exiles obviously were writing in Italian.
Yes.
But then after the freedom of the press, then we get this change, another development.
We have a development where we start having newspapers in Maltese, not necessarily always written by Maltese, but in Maltese. In fact, the first single issue of the first Maltese newspaper, which is L'Arlecchino, was published even before, it was in the air, even before the granting of freedom of press. Freedom of press was granted in March 1839. L'Arlecchino was published, this one issue, which was a supplement of the English newspaper, the Harlequin, which was being published by Protestant missionaries here in Malta. It was a four-page issue, which I reproduce in my book, all of it, to celebrate basically the visit of the Queen Adelaide, who was living in Malta at that time. So, and this is in December 1838. So, granting of freedom of press.
But what would have been the reason for them wanting to write the Maltese? Presumably, they were trying to put across an agenda of their own.
Yes, I mean, this particular issue is very much paying lip service to the Queen. It's ad honorem of Queen Adelaide, most of it. And so, but the aim was to get to the people who, not to the cultured people, the people who did not understand Italian. Therefore, not the lawyers, the priests, the doctors, the ruling class, the political class of Malta, because those. Their normal language of communication and work was Italian. But this was meant for the people who were village people and so on, who did not understand Italian. And in fact, most of these newspapers in Maltese have as their aim, their main aim, education, educating the masses. In part, this first L'Arlecchino is different, as I said, because it's more of the Maltese showing their gratitude to Queen Adelaide and so on. But what is interesting in this issue, I find very interesting too, is a letter supposedly written from Arp in Gozo by Godgertons. I suspect it might have been written by George Percy Badger, who was one of the animators behind these newspapers, who was a linguist, but also a Protestant missionary, living in Malta, because the Protestants used to send Arabists to Malta to continue training in the language, to then go and evangelize in North Africa. But Badger wrote a book about Malta, a description of Malta and Gozo too, and he actually spent time in Arp because he discovered the Breku. He describes the Breku, which is this particular dialect of Arp, which is a language on its own, actually, which still exists today, and very few people can still speak it. So he must have lived in Arp, because this letter is written in the Arp dialect, and it's quite interesting, because I believe it is the first consciously written text in dialect in Maltese. We're talking about 1838.
It's included in
the issue of L'Arlecchin. So it starts off with Sur Arlecchin, Ahfrinna, Ashma, Nafush, Nikbulek, Bittalian, Un'as, and you have the vowels to reflect the dialect, the Blinglese. Is Danispirau, Linti Tifemu, Ukul, Biluci. And it's a three page thing. So this, I think, should be of interest to linguists and dialectologists. I might be wrong, but I believe it is the first consciously written thing in a dialect, in a Maltese dialect. And it's described as the Arab dialect.
And the L'Arlecchin was a one-off, a sort of
it's ad-hoc a one-off, issue. Yes.
Many of them started off probably intending to carry on, but didn't. They were short-lived.
Yes,
made this comment in your book that many of them were short-lived. In fact, you refer to Il Malti, which lasted just a year, 1843
to 1844,
and that was quite
long.
That's a lot. So these initial drivers of these initiatives were perhaps people like Badger who were trying to perhaps put forward their agenda.
Another one is James Richardson.
Uh-huh.
He was also promoter of a number of newspapers, even in English, the Phosphorus, the Clown, the National. We had also English newspapers at this time. These are all by these British Missionary Society and so on. Let's not forget also the importance of the British missionaries in the Maltese language, because they commissioned the first translations of the Bible in Malta. Paolo Canolo, Michelangelo Camilleri, Michelanton Vassalli, his son, they were all Protestant translators, they were all translators for the Protestants of bits and pieces of the Bible, obviously paid for. And so this gave a spinter, a push to the use of the Maltese language. There might have been ideological reasons behind it, and in fact I believe that some of these newspapers in Maltese could have actually been written in Maltese to get, of course, the normal people to read them. But then bit by bit could have been used as an influence to
changing things from the bottom,
things,
kind of.
Yes, thing. But they were, of course, very, very important. But then we had also the Maltese who started writing.
But why were they short-lived? Why weren't there ones that went on and on for
years?
Well,
it's interesting because I can give you, for example, a little poem which I quote in a newspaper which has survived. Because remember that I'm talking about newspapers this which did not survive. Newspapers written in Maltese, which are mentioned by the newspapers in their polemici. And unfortunately, you realize that Malta hasn't changed much in these. You've got all these petty little squabbles and insults ad personam between these intellectuals and pseudo-intellectuals and so on. Il Frosta, which is a newspaper of 1867, so it's 40 years after freedom of press, has one of its poems is about other newspapers that did not survive, but its intention was to survive. And why did not survive? And it says, Ma come night, li colla ken fogli harjusissa, min sena, min fti tan as, ittini hat mai missa tini sena, ai duli per oshkinu, attau biklimom gost, tajir, jlitu xenati, gideb min laktar tost, u kif intenni jena rittu li seħu dawn. Is dal frosta mintana ma ta' azzawn? So it's a declaration that the frosta will not be full of tajir, jlietu, xenati. In fact, it was not true. And in fact, the frosta did not last more than 5 months too. So that's...
So people would have got bored of them or somehow they would have run out of steam?
Well, one of them was, they were mainly run by one person who would use maybe the newspaper to try and get his own back on on others, on somebody else. So you can be very shocking in the beginning, you know, and then you have to come up with news. If not, the major problem was money. Most of the times you see them saying, look, we don't have money, no, we don't have abbonati, please enroll, because if not, we will not manage. And then you see, bit by bit, the newspaper dying out.
Because at that time, there wouldn't have been many printing presses. Probably there would have been a few.
There were a few, but, I mean, relatively, when you consider that until 50 years earlier, 80 years earlier, there had been nothing at all, they were quite developed. So much so that the Italians, until 1860, were publishing the things in Italian, which were prohibited in Italy, newspapers, to send to Italy, to distribute in Italy. Remember that we also had people like the first Italian Prime Minister, Francesco Crispi, living in Malta. We had the first Italian, those that were to become the first Italian President, Speaker of Parliament, of Senate, Luigi Settembrini. So we had people of a certain level here who were obviously meeting in the cafes in Valletta with the intelli- and influencing these people. So people like Fortunato Mizzi, Giuseppe Muscatazzopardi, Zaccaria Roncalli, Salvatore Fendo de Mannarino, writers in Maltese, famous writers in Maltese, and also politicians, all started by writing in the newspapers of Italian exiles. And obviously they were discussing things with these people, where they were influenced by them, etc.
So, lovely to be able to be a fly on the wall on some of those conversations in Valletta. And I was amused leafing through your book to see these satirical obituaries.
Yes.
There's a lovely one of the Telegrafo Mercantile Maltese.
Yes, I mean, this is the bitchiness also. It proves the bitchiness of these newspapers, no? Which most of them were, as I said, used as an instrument to make fun of others, to insult others. By the way, one thing that they really, which sticks out in most of these, is also, apart from the educational aim, so etc., this sort of thing, is the theatre scene. They are very much into the theatre scene, which shows that it was a very popular genre, both the Teatro Reale, which was first the Manuel and then was the Barry. They were both called Teatro Reale. But also there is one newspaper in particular, which I then had the luck to be able to peruse, because I, before publishing the book, which by the way is going to be, the launch is going to be held on the 11th of February, Friday 11th February, at the Hilton, and the publishers are the Instituto of Giornalisti, Tutta Giornalisti Maltin, and the Tomas Foundation for Journalism. One of these newspapers, Nafra su Colombo, which is mentioned, Dr. Ganado, I showed my article, my book before to his doctor, and he said, come along, and Dr. Ganado has the whole set of 64 issues, 2 years. So this was a newspaper that lasted. It was basically animated by Carmelo Camilleri, who is an actor, famous actor, Il Papà, and many other things. And therefore you have all the theatrical scene of the period, but also in Vittoriosa and in Valletta mainly, Tanna Halohra. So not only the, let's say, the official theatre, the official operas with people coming from abroad only, but also the local companies acting in the theatre. And reference to this you will find in various other newspapers. Anyway, getting back to this necrologio, no? It's a nice skull. You would find, when one newspaper died out, their rivals would be very happy. And so, Bishnahar Uom, sort of, as the Maltese say, no? They would put in an obituary, no? In memoriam. Of course, satirical. This is in Italian, for example, non è più. Poveretto, 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 morire di nedia dopo aver inghiottito tanto biscotto. Piangete, o lettori, il telegrafo mercantile maltese è cessato di vivere ieri. Eccetera, eccetera. Egli però ha raggiunto i suoi nella tomba. Pace e requie, direbbe il portafoglio alla sua bell'anima. So, this newspaper, il telegrafo mercantile maltese, is considered to be a short-lived newspaper, and you can really see the pleasure of Il Folletto, the newspaper which published this obituary there.
That was 1868.
This is 1868, mm-hmm. Already a bit of a later period, yes.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the ones that you found in Dr. Albert Ganado's connection, I mean, you knew about them through secondary sources.
Exactly.
And you thought that there weren't any still extant.
There aren't any extant in public libraries. Mm. This is, I mean, obviously the whole book is about So I start off from Bianca Fiorentini's Echi del Risorgimento a Malta. Obviously, without her seminal work, this could not have been done. And then I went through newspapers, contemporary newspapers, and seeing cross-reference. So you would see, you know, as if in the Times of Malta Today, you'd find the reference to the Malta Today. And the Malta Today doesn't exist. But then you know that a newspaper called Malta Today existed, because you can see that. So I built a little thing on various newspapers, various chapters, of course, in Il Trombetta, La Trombetta. There are so many. Now I can't, you know, sometimes you forget what you've written. It's a big problem when you... L'Ordine, La Torre di Babele, Il Furetto, L'Imas, Il Forca. These are the Maltesians. Remember, this is only limited to Maltese. Maltese newspapers. So I could build something about it, but of course not seeing the text. I would not exclude, as has happened now with Nafra su Colombo, that there are, of course, these newspapers, issues of these newspapers are in private collections.
Of course, but sitting in somebody's drawer somewhere.
Or else, you know, private collection. I mean, Dr. Granados, very magnanimous, very generous with everybody. When all scholars know that he is very ready to share his knowledge of things. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen every time. There are people who tend to hide their things, sometimes even for monetary reasons, thinking, you know, that this can be very, very precious and valuable. But unfortunately, if things are unknown, they become less valuable. So it's better to share them, because they might even get... So an aim of this book is also maybe to encourage people who have in private collections, might have these newspapers, to make them known. The more they are known, it will give us, build a little mosaic of our history. Something more, we'll get to know something about our country, our identity, something we so much speak about. Exactly. But it's also beneficial, I think, for whoever has them.
You have a chapter in the book about Giuseppe Zammit, Il Brighella, and also Vincenzo Azzopardi.
Yes.
Who were they? Why have they been inserted in this collection? What is it about them that you found of interest in this context?
Yes, Brighella is a very famous person of the 19th century. I mean, he was a priest, Don Giuseppe Zammit, who was an extremely good writer, mainly known for his Latin satire, but also for his writing in Italian. But he was also a writer in Maltese, Bertoldo. He wrote in so many newspapers, and was always very controversial. He was always very, you know, picante. He would pick up a fight.
What was his agenda, really? I mean, what was he wanting to promote?
He was really...
or criticise.
Quite conservative. I mean, I wouldn't say he was a revolutionary. Mm-hmm. But he was an intelligent person, and I think he would not tolerate mediocrity very much. So most of the time, he is attacking or criticising those... persons who are writing and who are not up to standard in that time. So, but he was even, he had libel cases against him. He was really tough. And Brighella wrote in so many newspapers, like Democrito, Lo Spettatore Imparziale, Brighella. That's why he was called Brighella, because one newspaper was actually called Brighella.
I was wondering where he got his nickname.
Which is a maschera veneziana, no? Bertoldo, Il Cospicuano, L'Osservatore Maltese, Diogene, Serpinella, L'Ordine, many, many others. And one of them was Il Barbagianni, which is a newspaper of which we don't have any copies.
Oh, really?
It was called Barbagianni, Foglietto Satirico. And so he's included amongst these writers, because he was also the promoter, among from Bertoldo. There are two theses which have been written, one by Mario De Bono on Brighella's Italian works, mm-hmm. And there's another one by the student of mine, who did the thesis with me, on Brighella's Maltese works. So I think these could be, if worked upon, to have a book on Brighella. There's a lot of material already to be found in these two theses. Baron Vincenzo Azzopardi was also a nobleman. He had produced a newspaper titled Il Hasna Maltia. We don't know the contents. We only know, for example, in La Rivista, è un giornaletto in idioma maltese, it's described, pieno di curiose informazioni riguardanti la storia naturale, natural history, i costumi e le arti, e adorno di bellissime vignette. Esso potrebbe servire come magazzino di conoscenze utili per quella classe dei nostri che non intendono la lingua di nostra educazione. è utilissimo particolarmente all'agricoltura. He was involved in agriculture. He was in some commission for agriculture. And from the newspaper, see, it says it's very useful for those people who don't understand Italian, presumably people who live more in villages. Uh-huh. But it says it is utile particolarmente all'agricoltura. So there must have been articles on agriculture, on, methods of cultivation. But one other thing about, so far he wrote a dictionary of the Maltese language. He had written a dictionary, piccolo dizionario, Maltese, Italiano, Inglese. So he is also a lexicographer. He obviously enjoyed working with the Maltese language in some way or another. Mm-hmm. So these people are part of our history.
Absolutely.
Maybe not well known by the general public, and I think they deserve to be, but not to be forgotten. No?
Absolutely, no less important, that's for sure. And now that this has been done and dusted, have you got a new project just in the last half minute that we've got?
Yes, I do. In fact, I should be publishing a book, hopefully towards the end of the year, a new book. This is more on, say, something in the Middle Ages. It's about Malta, its people, language and toponymy. It's 5-6 chapters on different aspects about the Maltese language, about Maltese people and about the place names of Malta. And they can range from something before Christ to 16th century, 17th century.
Sounds fascinating.
I hope to look forward to seeing that later on
in the year.
Thanks.
Well, thank you very, very much, Professor Cassola, for coming on University Matters.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series, University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.